Earners, what's going on? Listen, EYLU is relaunching, revamping, retooling. That's right, we're creating a new educational experience that's more expansive. Shotty, tell them what we got.
Yes, 2023. We got a lot in store, a lot planned for you guys. So you know that EYLU already includes monthly financial planning calls with me, book club calls with Troy, real estate calls with MG the Mortgage Guy, access to the Home Buying Blueprint, Volume 1 and Volume 2. Part of the revamp will include 27 local chapters from across the United States, live interactive teaching, hands-on, not just pre-recorded videos, plus 15 brand new curriculums.
The biggest just got bigger.
Head over to EYLUniversity.com. That's EYLUniversity.com. See you there.
Ernest, what's up? Look, if creating content is more than just a passion project for you, it's time to make the passion profitable. With Kajabi, you can easily diversify your revenue, build your brand, and transform your audience into loyal customers. I know firsthand how challenging it could be to juggle content creation and business development, but Kajabi makes it easy to streamline everything in one place. As a creator, you are your brand, so your business should reflect exactly what you envision. With Kajabi, not only can you build your business your way, but you can also keep every cent of what you earn. It's an all-in-one platform that lets you focus on what matters most, your content and your audience. And let's face it, we all need a little help sometimes, especially when you're a one-person show. But you don't need to hire a full-time team. You just need Kajabi. Kajabi is a leading all-in-one platform that helps creators and entrepreneurs build successful online businesses by unlocking predictable, recurring revenue. Whether you're a coach, content creator, or educator, Kajabi makes it easy to transform your skills, passions, and experiences into enriching online courses, exclusive membership sites, subscription podcasts, and more. The best part? Kajabi doesn't take a cut of your revenue. Everything you create is owned and controlled by you, so you keep 100% of what you earn. On top of that, Kajabi gives you robust analytics, easy payment options, email marketing tools, and customizable website templates. Everything you need to grow your business seamlessly. And here's the thing, you don't need a massive audience to make sustainable income. Thousands of creators are making six and seven figures with Kajabi, even with less than 50,000 followers. So if you're navigating the challenges of generating revenue as a creator, Kajabi can be the game changer you need. Right now, Kajabi is offering an incredible deal, a free 30-day trial to help you kickstart your business. Just head over to kajabi.com/earn to get started. That's kajabi.com/earn. Join the creators and entrepreneurs who've made over $7 billion on their platforms and take control of your financial future with Kajabi today. kajabi.com/earn. Don't miss out on this opportunity to turn your passion into profit. Earners, what's up? Y'all know the adage, buy low, sell high. It's easy to say, hard to do. For example, high interest rates are crushing the real estate market right now. Demand is dropping and prices are falling, even for many of the best assets. It's no wonder the Fundrise Flagship Fund plans to go on a buying spree, expanding its billion-dollar real estate portfolio over the next few months. You can add the Fundrise Flagship Fund to your portfolio in just minutes and with as little as $10 by visiting fundrise.com/earn. That's fundrise.com/earn. Carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the Fundrise Flagship Fund before investing. This and other information can be found in the fund's prospectus at fundrise.com/flagship. This is a paid advertisement.
All right, guys, welcome back. This is going to be a dope episode. We got a legend in the game, Brian Michael Cox.
Yes. Hey, man, thank you for having me, bro.
I appreciate it, man. Yes. Grammy-winning songwriter and producer. Worked with some people that you may have heard of. Usher, Mariah Carey, Mary J. Blige, to name a few.
You may have heard of them. People,
he even met. They might make it in the business one day.
Yeah, you know, come from strong music pedigree. Yeah. We go to his parties all the time in Atlanta.
That's a fact. Grew up on his music.
Entrepreneur as well. And somebody has constantly reinvented himself over his 25 years.
This is like 26 years now,
26 years.
Yeah, man.
So
don't even feel like it. It's crazy, but yeah.
Yeah, so this is going to be a very interesting, multi-layered conversation. But first and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Man, thank you guys for having me, man.
Yeah, real, long overdue, man. Like we said,
I appreciate it.
We frequent a lot of your parties.
Yes, man. Y'all pull up on me
all the time.
Y'all pull up on me all the time, y'all. We always, you know, have great energy when we see each other. And I appreciate you, brothers, man. I appreciate y'all supporting us in that way in Atlanta. Also, just what you guys are doing in general. You know what I mean?
Like, appreciate it.
Great, 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 great thing that you guys are doing.
Appreciate it. So, all right. So, I want to talk about what you're doing now. But first, I want to talk about songwriting.
Okay.
Right? Because I feel like we haven't really had this conversation yet. We've spoken to a lot of musicians, a lot of rappers, mm-hmm. singers, stuff like that. But I don't think we've spoken to too many composers. So, walk us through the process of actually writing for somebody else. Like, do you have to put yourself in that person's shoes and think like how that person would think? Like, how difficult is it to actually write for somebody that's not yourself?
What's interesting is that when you first start writing, right, you don't have any point of reference, right? When you, in the beginning, you're just kind of like, okay, I want to make a song for, you know, Whitney Houston. You know, I don't know Whitney Houston, so how do I, you know, you try to mimic whatever her previous works are, what you would think, you imagine, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You use your imagination like crazy in the beginning, right? Because you don't have access, you know? That period is when you are like really honing your craft, right? Producing, you know, writing, you're really honing your craft. It's almost like that's part of the 10,000 hours, you know, the imaginative part, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to a place where you become, you know, you're able to get in those rooms or, you know, the concept, right? So initially, you just kind of just, you know, hopefully you're going to nail it. Hopefully, you know, you get in the room and you have something they like and then you nail it. But then what ended up happening for me is that I ended up working with Jermaine, right, early on, Jermaine Dupri early on. And I learned a valuable lesson in a session we did for You Got It Bad. I learned, it's something I take with me everywhere, right? It's called the song is in the conversation. So my process now, what has been my process for the past maybe 2 decades, is if somebody booked me for a session, right? I like to get multiple days because I want to take one day to have a conversation, to understand, you know what I mean? What you want to talk about, to understand, you know what I mean? Even what you're going through. Maybe you don't even know what you want to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through the conversation, we figure out, okay, this could be, you know, I figure out your personality. I figure out, because you have to sing these songs for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? I don't have to sing them. You know what I mean? I make them, you have to sing them. So I want you to be emotionally attached or feel somewhat emotionally attached to the song when you're singing it. You know what I mean? So the process now is just really having that conversation. You know, creating a comfortable environment for artists to feel like they can let their guard down and they can say what they need to say and talk about the things they want to talk about. And then through that, we digest that and, you know, it comes out through the music. You know, that's how I like to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
For the most part.
So it's interesting. You said you started with Jermaine Young. So you're, is it My Way or is it the 8701?
8701 was the
8701. Because it's like, this happens very quick. Yeah. So I'm wondering, when do you realize, like, I'm nice at this? Because everybody credits you for the Usher stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, my favorite, arguably, is J.E. Heartbreak.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, like, if you look at the writing and producing credits,
yeah, I'm
you're all over that.
Yeah, yeah. I did the majority of the album.
Is that when you, it's like, I mastered this?
Yeah, with Jagged, it was when I figured it out. You know, it's the point where I feel like it was figured out. You know, there was things that happened before that. You know, I did a group called Profile. I did a few things before that. You know what I mean? I did a remix for Sam Salter. And, you know, just a few things that kind of like, you know, put a couple of dollars in your pocket, get a little credit. You know what I'm saying? But when I got with Jagged, it was more, I didn't know what I was doing, but I was with them every day. And then when you, it's like the more we were doing, I felt like, okay, no, I'm starting to know what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we got to those four songs, we got to He Can't Love You, Healing, Heartbreak, and What You're Trying to Do.
Classics.
Then it was like, okay, this is the pocket I need to stay in, right? And then we had an early version of Promise, right? An early version that they did with another guy named Bert and Gizzo. This is, it was another set of producers that they did, but then they brought the idea to me, and then we made another version, and then we went and made the final version with Jermaine. So you're right. J. Harper was when it was like, okay, I'm doing this for real now. Like, okay, now I'm in the game. You know what I'm saying? And it definitely, from that point on, was when, you know, everything started to just kind of.
Yeah. So you're getting credit as the writer for the song and the producer for the song. I remember this distinctly when this album came out. This is 98.
Yeah, 98. Yeah, you're right.
I know it.
You're right.
Listening to that.
You used to open up the credits.
Yeah. You know what it was that and Donnell Jones. That's how I was bumping.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, so I was bumping at the time.
Yeah.
And so from a financial standpoint, more incentive, right, to have both credits attached to you.
Yeah. You know, that particular subject is always an interesting subject to talk about because people hear the word written by and they automatically assume that it's lyrics. You know what I mean? That people do not take the music into consideration. Back in the, you know, 70s and 80s, the credits read music by, lyrics by. You know what I'm saying? And then somewhere, you know, in the late 80s, early 90s, that particular credit got thrown out the window. I guess, you know, they're trying to consolidate and make more room for, you know, credits on paper. And it was just, okay, just written by, you know what I'm saying? Written by. So it's published works this way. Music, lyrics. In Nashville, they split everything 100%, you know, no matter what you did, you could have wrote one line. You know, if we're in a room together and we make a song and that song ends up being something, it's 33 and a third, no matter what, right?
Every person that writes gets the same
amount, no matter what, right? In urban culture and in pop culture, really, in pop music culture in general, it doesn't really work that way. You know, they have some people break it down, some random arithmetic, they'll break it down. The way that I used to break it down before was music was 50%, lyrics 50%, right? And if you split them, like if me and you made the music and you just wrote lyrics by yourself, right? Then we split the 50 and you get 50%.
So music, the beat, the producer.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The producer gets 50% of the publishing.
And the music.
And the person that writes
the lyrics gets 50%. Yeah.
So there's no set standard.
No, that's the problem.
It's whatever you want to do.
Whatever. I mean, it should be a set standard.
It's an unwritten rule.
Yeah.
That in hip-hop culture, it's 50-50.
50-50, yeah.
But you're saying in music, in Nashville, in country music.
Country music, yeah.
What does the producer get in country music?
The producer is technically the composer. See what I'm saying?
The producer is the writer.
Yeah, composing music is writing music. Do you see what I'm saying? So the composer, in country music, right? So if I'm in a room, right, and we're making R&B or hip hop music, right? There's an MPC in front of me or a laptop or whatever, right? And I make the beat, you write the lyrics, right? Take the computer out of the equation in Nashville, right? And put a piano in front of me.
And you write in music.
Written music and written music.
Put a piano in front of me, I'm playing chords, I'm writing music. It's literally the same exact thing. But just when you're doing beats, when you're composing beats, you're putting drums to it, and you.
So those guys in the country music world, they're writing the words to the song, and they're actually composing the music.
Yeah,
they're doing both of those.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So, it's really simple. If we are in a room together in Nashville, and instead of a computer, there's a piano. It's really the same exact thing, which is why now I tend to split everything evenly, even in my world at this point now, because it's pretty much the same thing. You know what I'm saying? It's just, now producing is me actually creating the beat, getting the whole song to the finish line. That's producing. Mm. So, for example, me and Jermaine did a record for Tamia called Steel, right? That we produced for her on one of her albums. She was on Elektra, right? So me, Jermaine, and Jonte wrote this song Me and Jermaine made the beat, so we're the producers on the song, right? That same song, she redoes it as a country song. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. We didn't produce that version. You know what I mean? It's not our beat. We didn't see it to the finish line. One day I just got a freaking check. You know, it was like, oh yeah, still the country version. I was like, oh shit. Okay, you know what I mean? You know, whatever country producer she went to go work with, they just remade our song. You know what I mean? So they didn't get any publishing, but I don't know how much they charged on the producer fee.
Yeah.
We didn't get none of that. You know
y'all
what I'm saying?
Y'all wrote the lyrics to that.
We wrote the lyrics and the music.
And the music.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? They just remade the song. Yeah, okay. You know what I'm saying? So I think that it gets a little skewed, especially now with the whole concept of like, you know, people, you know, looking at lyricist, you know, especially in hip hop, it's like when you see all these credits and it's like, who wrote what? You know what I mean? Like, you got ghostwriters or whatever. In real life, it's usually if you see a bunch of names, usually, it's, especially in hip hop, it's the sample, you know what I'm saying? And it's producers that compose the music. So they're part of the writing credit too. You know what I mean?
So for artists that don't produce or write, they get no publishing?
They're not supposed to.
But they can.
They can though. You can negotiate it if you are in a
big
space.
Big enough artist.
Yeah, if you are, you know, a platinum selling artist and you feel like, yo, it's my duty to get, you know, throw me five. Throw me, you know what I'm saying? Whatever. You know, because no matter what you get, even if you get 2% of a record, it's still, you know, lifetime residual. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Now, to Jermaine, obviously you grew up in music. You have obviously experienced it. At that point, are y'all familiar with the business of it, right? As you're going through this process with publishing and royalties, you have a firm understanding of it, or is that something that you're learning?
Something I learned along the way, okay. To be honest with you. I didn't even realize, and we were talking about, you used the word entrepreneurship earlier. I didn't even realize that I was going into business, like creating a business for myself. I didn't even look at it like, oh, this is my company. This is my boom. You know what I mean? You know, you just want to get in the music business. You know, and you don't even have any idea that your production company is actually a company. Your publishing company is actually a holding company for your royalties and for your, you know what I mean? Like, you have no idea. You just kind of like, you know, do I set up an ASCAP account? Do I, you don't even know what you're doing in the beginning. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think that throughout the years, I learned that, oh no, Brian, you are a business. You are actually an entrepreneur. It's more than you being a songwriter. It's more than you being a producer and composer. Like, these are businesses you're building. So from that angle, how are you going to shift and make this make some sense?
Which was the record? It was like, all right, this is a bit, is it, you got it bad?
No, it was, literally it was everything. Yeah, it was you got it bad. You're right. It was because you got it bad was such a big record.
Yes, yes.
You know what I mean? And I made a deal. I made my first publishing deal with Warner Chappell. And I didn't have any understanding of it. You know what I mean? Any understanding of what I was, you know, I trusted my attorney. I trusted my managers. You know, I didn't have any understanding of it. I just knew I was going to get a check. And I knew how many songs I had to turn in. And I knew that, you know what I mean? You know, I didn't understand retention period. I didn't understand the actual percentage of how much you get recouped against. Like, I didn't understand none of that. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, I just knew, okay, they're going to give me $500,000. Let me get that.
Is that how it works? So you get it, there's a lump sum, and they're like, we need 20 tracks from you.
Well, yeah, so back then it was that way. Okay. Back then it was like, okay, yo, if you're going to do a deal, we're going to give you a five-year deal, which is like a, we're going to give you, you know, it'd be a 3-year deal with two options or whatever, right? And it's like, okay, hey, you know, for your first year, depending on, you know, this max and mini. So let's say your mini is 250, your max is 500,000. And let's say, depending on who you are, where you are in your career, and depending on what's in the pipeline, they'll give you the max. That's cool, 500,000, boom. And then each year, depending on where you are, the number can fluctuate, right? So if you recoup the first year, okay, cool. We're going to roll it to your next option. Next option could be more money. But in hindsight, it felt like it was designed to keep you in debt. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In hindsight, those deals feel egregious because you don't even understand how you're getting, you know, you don't have any understanding of how you're getting recouped. Like, how you going
to
recoup?
Settle for you not to recoup.
Yeah. You think, oh, every dollar that comes in, I got this advance. Every dollar that comes in is going to go to my recoupment. It doesn't work that way. Because they got to get paid, too. So what happens is, you have to negotiate that dollar amount, too. So if you've like 50-50, really, so really, you for every dollar, you're getting 50 cents going towards your recoupment. So it's making your recoupment go mad slow. Mm. And you'd be like, you look up and you think a year later, I should be going to my next option. Like, no, you still owe us. Like, how?
So illustrate new ideas.
Yeah.
Talk about, the concept behind that and how that ties in with, records and publishing.
Well, illustrate new ideas is an idea that came to me a few years ago. I wanted to really restructure how my business was done. I really wanted to understand the business better, and it started out as just a idea for me to do random content and things of that nature, but then my wheelhouse is music, so you say, okay, that's what I'm good at, that's what I'm what I do best, let me lean into that. And this artist Jack Freeman, I've been knowing him for a minute. And we've been trying to figure out a way to work together. You know what I'm saying? Like, how are we going to work together? I would give him a few tracks for independent releases he was doing. And last year I was like, yo, bro, let's just do a project. Like I'm trying to build this company. Let's do a project. And, let's see where we go with it. And then in the process of me doing this, it is definitely opened my mind, opened my eyes to exactly what I want to do. So I want to be a safe haven for artists and for creatives. I want them to know that they're going to, we're going to do super fair deals. We're not going to do deals that lock people in, on wow. I'm just not trying to be that person. I've been locked in a deal before for, however long, not able to get out. And I want to be able to have a place where artists feel nimble.
So it's a record label.
Yeah. It's a label, and I'm doing I have a publishing leg that's coming out. I'm in the middle of negotiating a deal right now for the publishing arm.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so, go ahead. Yeah. No, I was thinking from a creative standpoint, you've been in this game, like you said, 25 years.
Mm.
There's been obviously a change in music. There's been a change in social media.
Yeah.
Talk about the impact that it's had on some of the recent success of the things that you've been doing. I mean, TikTok has taken money long.
Money long record to the top. Like, I'm gonna keep it real, man. That's something that was that we could not have predicted. You know what I'm saying? Like, social media has always been it's the X factor. You could do the regular thing. They went about promoting her album, Def Jam and Shock and them went about promoting her album. A very old school way, with a single, very old school way initially. It was like, yo, we're going to put this song out, we're going to go to radio, and they did all those things, and they built a proper foundation, and the record was actually doing extremely well on radio already, like adult R&B radio stations. We had a number one with that. It was like, she was doing well already. It smelled like a hit already, you know what I'm saying? But top of the year, TikTok had, the girl with the blue pajamas or whatever that was.
Crazy.
That shit just went nuts. And for me, it's like, wow. Thank you. That's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? I wasn't ready. We weren't expecting that at all.
When you hear it, it feels like an era of R&B.
Yeah.
It just has that feel to it. Yeah. So like when you hear it on the radio, it's like, I remember listening to songs like this on the radio. When you're trying to craft that sound, are you drawing back to that time where it's like, people like R&B's dead, but like obviously y'all still writing hits.
She wanted that sound.
She wanted that, okay.
She specifically, was like, do the thing that y'all did. That was basically, it was very, very specific. She was very intentional about how she wanted that song to sound.
So what, how much money can you actually make writing a song?
A number one Hot 100 song, you can make, as far as it can generate, the song could generate, from on the publisher side, a minimum of $1 million if it's a number one. You know what I mean? You know, it could generate a lot of money. And depending on the splits and who, you know, so if you're in a publishing deal, if you're not a publishing deal, if you, you know what I mean? If you're on 15% of the song, if you're on 25% of the song, if you're on 50, you know what I mean? Depends on the split. But the song itself could generate a lot of money. You can make a lot of money if you are a hit songwriter.
That's if you're a top 100.
Yeah, top 100.
But like the Dream, like, all right, so who's your top songwriter? The Dream. Is The Dream the top songwriter?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely.
So he's making millions of dollars.
Yeah, he's making tens of millions of dollars.
I looked at that.
Just
that,
every year, just off of
that Cowboy Carter.
Yeah, he's making a lot.
But he also said, he said something about like working with Beyonce where, you know, it's not a regular deal working with Beyonce.
No.
Your splits is going to be a lot less.
Yeah, but the density of those songs, the density of
he writes a lot of them.
Like he makes a lot of the songs and those songs perform so well.
Yeah.
I mean, even when you don't think those songs are performing well, you know what I mean? We were talking about this the other day. I was saying, somebody asked me like, what do you think about Cowboy Carter? And I was like, I like it. Right. And it was like, we don't really hear a lot of it. You know what I mean? I was like, go look at the metrics. Like,
come to my house.
Where her, the music, like, she is doing well.
Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting because I haven't heard this song. I haven't heard too many songs either. So where's it doing well at?
She's doing well on all DSPs. She's doing well now. She's doing well on country music radio stations.
Number one record.
Her fans are so relentless. You know what I mean? Like they just, she could really do no wrong with her fans. You know what I mean? So when you have a fan base like that, you super serve them. You know what I mean? She super serves the Beehive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like. No other. Like, you saw a renaissance, like, everybody had on silver and was coming to the concert. You know what I'm saying? Silver and black at the concert. So what you think they're going to be wearing at the concert? Cowboy Carter. Everybody going to have on cowboy boots and chaps and, you know, cowboy hats. Like, she's super serves her audience in a way that I haven't really seen an artist do in a long time. I mean, so even though to us, the consumers who are like the general consumers, it doesn't feel like massive, you know what I mean? But for her fans, it's massive.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Let's take our money.
You know, and so if you're the Dream, right, and you are locked into that situation, that's like guaranteed money.
Yeah.
It's like
every time.
Yeah. Every time. You know what I mean?
So, when you have a number one,
mm-hmm.
you got a bunch of them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's take Burn. Let's mm-hmm. take. You got it bad as you.
Mm-hmm.
Confessions,
mm-hmm.
Part Two, which they mm-hmm. said is the greatest R&B record of the. Congratulations,
I appreciate it, brother. Yes.
When you have a record like that, the longevity of it obviously plays out.
Mm-hmm.
But when you make a classic.
Mm-hmm.
Is there competition within yourself to say, how do I recreate it or how do I top it?
Yeah, I mean, always before, I think now it isn't. Now it doesn't matter now.
Okay.
Because I'm 46 years old. I've been doing this for 26 years or 27 years now. So it's like, you know, I think that you can get lost in the sauce trying to chase something that was, right?
Mm-hmm.
All you could do is just continue to try to outdo the competition is not about the past. The competition is about, the competitive spirit is about, can I make another one? Like I just, it don't even have to be another, the same thing. Can I just make something interesting that people want to hear? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we do it so much now. You know, we make music every day. So we make music every day, all your life. You know what I mean? I've been in the game 26, 27 years, but I've been making music since I was, you know, you know, I've been playing music since I was a kid. So you, every day of your life, it's like, it's now it's just, you know, you just, the competition is to continue to stay creative. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's to hope that the creativity never runs out. So you listen to things, you try to, you know, now it's just trying to stay inspired.
Yeah, the writing team, like I said, like y'all make hits.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you and Jermaine still write. Do you, Jante and Jermaine, do y'all ever get together and say,
yeah,
Let's create something?
Yeah. So we you know, Jante is has been leaning more into the, you know, business side. Like he went back to college and got his degree, a business, you know, business degree and all that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he's really working closely with Usher now in that capacity. But we still write. We still, you know, we still have those moments where we come together and do that. You know, me and Jermaine are pretty much the studio rats. We're the ones in the studio all day, all night. You know what I'm saying? So because everybody kind of works with each other in different capacities, we're always going to always be in a room together at some point. You know what I'm saying?
So as far as this nightlife conversation.
Yes.
So yes. I thought the party was called R&B Only, but it's Ladies Love R&B.
Ladies of R&B. So R&B Only is another part. It's somebody else's. So we started out, it's funny because Keith sent me the first flyer that we ever did. He sent it to me. I'm going to show you guys. It's crazy. In 2017. But we started as R&B Wednesdays.
Oh, yeah.
Right? That's where it started. Hey, started R&B Wednesdays. And we were with Rugs at SL Lounge. And I'm going to keep it real about that, too, right? I had no idea that was like that we were going to build that business. I didn't even look at that as a business initially. It was kind of like how the pitch was. It's crazy how we even started doing that party, right? Mm-hmm. I was like 2016. I went through like a wild breakup, right? It was this girl I thought I was going to marry, and the shit just didn't work out, right? And she ended up getting married to somebody else really quickly, right? Very quickly, right? And got pregnant and everything else. So it was like,
wow.
We don't talk about how like mental health, you know what I mean, affects, well, now we do, but at that time we didn't really talk about how mental health affects Black men, you know what I mean? And I remember sitting up, that year was so crazy because it was like my ex-girlfriend got married fast, then my Auntie Jackie had passed away, and then my father passed away.
Who passed away?
My Aunt Jackie had passed
away. Oh, your aunt. Okay.
And then my father passed away, right? So I remember sitting in my room one day like, okay, yo, I'm depressed, yo. I'm saying like, yo, like this is, you know, this is, because initially I knew I was, I was having a bout with depression, but I didn't want it to be because of the girl. You know what I'm saying? I was like, nah, I'm not going to let this situation, you know,
your pride,
keep me down, right? But then my aunt passed and my dad passed, and I was just like, oh man, I got to go see somebody, go talk to somebody. But in the midst of all of this, me and Keith started, you know, really hanging out. Like, Keith was always been my homeboy. We always were cool. You know, he was Usher's best friend. And so we've known each other for many, many years. But we just started, like, he'd be like, man, come, I'm going to pick you up, man. Because, you know, he knew I was, you know, down. So he'd be like, I'm coming to pick you up, man. We're going to go out. And we was literally going to the club every night in Atlanta, right? And this is, you know, 2016, 2017. This is, like, literally, it's only trap going on in the club.
Future heavy.
Yeah, it's only trap going on in the club. It's not like a whole lot of R&B going on in these weekly spots. Like, there were R&B parties popping up, like The Groove and, you know, Everyday People. And all, you know, those parties were happening, but I'm talking about in Atlanta, every day it was trap music, right? And then what started happening was we'd be at the party and we'd be like, man, this party's so weak. You know what I mean? Like it felt dark. You know what I mean? It just feels dark. The energy's dark. Everybody fights breaking out because the music make you want to fight. You know what I mean? Then something started to happen, right? We started going to these parties, and like around like 11:45, right? The DJ would go into an R&B set, whether it was an old school R&B set, you know, 90s, or he would play R&B for like 30, 45 minutes. And you would actually see the energy of the crowd lift, right? Like, you see the girls start dancing, you see, you know what I mean? And you actually saw it. So I would be like, yo, man, we need to do a party like this that's all night, that plays this kind of music all night, you know what I mean? And his lady was working at this club. She was a bartender at this club, at Rugs Club, SL. And we would always go kick it, go see Janine, and, you know, and she said Rugs came to her. I was like, yo, you know, your boyfriend is here all the time. To my Keith, your boyfriend's here all the time. Like, why don't you have him come do a party? You know what I mean? And she was the one, she at first was like, I wasn't quite sure y'all would do a party at SL, but she told him about it. And he was like, let me talk to Brian about it. Came and talked to me about it. He was like, yo, man, look, I don't know if there's any money in it like that. At least we'll be able to hear the music we want to hear and we get the drink for free. That was basically the pitch. You know what I mean? I was like, well, I'm in. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay. And I think the first week, maybe we made like I think we walked away with $60 a piece, some of that, something crazy. But then what happened was we had such a good time the first night, right? And Ruggs told us, he was like, yo, I'm telling you, man, this song did. Like, it was only maybe 10 people in there the first Wednesday, 20 people maybe. But Ruggs was like, yo, this is going to jump. I'm telling you, like, don't quit. Like, let's just keep doing it. And like a month later, bro, like, the party was lit. Like,
and it stayed. Like, when did it go to Red Martini?
We went to Red Martini in 2019. No, I'm sorry. In 2020.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
2020, because we were at Medusa.
That's what I said. Before. The first one was in the Medusa.
We were at Medusa before. And then and Medusa, they had some management issues or whatever, Medusa, and then we had to move the party. No, yeah, we ended up moving the party. Moved the party to
Red Martini.
Red Martini.
And it's been there ever since.
And the location, Red Martini is just one of them spots. It's just like, it's easy to go to. Everybody knows where it's at. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And we literally in 2020 is when I was like, it was 2021 is when I was like, yo, we doing this, like, this is a business now, bro. Let's really expand it. So then that led us into doing Vegas. We did Usher's after parties for Vegas. So we made a deal, did Usher's after parties for Vegas. Then we ended up going to Dubai. Then we ended up doing something in Toronto. And so it started turning this thing. We're like, we started doing pop-ups. Then we had Houston for like a year and a half. So it's turn into this thing where, like, okay, yo, this is like a real viable business.
It's one of these things, you know? Where, so we got introduced to it from Alex, Good Energy.
Yes.
And he always got like the best table of.
Yeah.
So he's the one that introduced us. That was back in the Medusa days.
Yeah.
And then shout out to Mixmaster David.
Mixmaster David, yeah,
my,
bro.
He actually did my birthday party.
That's so, a good dude, man.
So what happened is that, you know, once we started getting this vibe of like this R&B vibe, mm-hmm. you never really realize what you're missing until you actually see it, right? So we've been going to parties all our lives, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just, you know, you just adapt to what is being played, mm-hmm. right? So we adapt to trap music. Mm-hmm. We adapt to, in New York, it's heavy Latin influence, yeah. Reggaeton, heavy. Mm-hmm. You know, you just adapt to whatever it is, but just that R&B vibe, I'm like, damn, this is dope. Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I didn't even realize. And then we interviewed Jimmy. So you ever heard of Jimmy Cafe in the Bronx?
Mm-hmm.
So the owner, Jimmy, legendary restaurateur, and he's had a bunch of different clubs and restaurants. And we was talking to him and we was saying, like, you know, back in the days, there used to be a dress code to get to a club, right?
Yes.
Hard bottoms. Like, mm-hmm. if you wanted to control the element, you had, but the dress code has gone away. There's no dress code anymore. So I'm like, well, how do you control an element without, like, profiling people, right? Mm-hmm. And he was like, you do it through music.
Yeah. Oh, bro.
And then I never really thought about it like that, but he was like, yo, if you want to control an element and create a vibe, play the music mm-hmm. that's going to weed out the nonsense.
Is it 100%?
I'm like,
no, it's crazy. I was telling somebody this. I was like, at Red Martini, even in the history of our party, Ladies of R&B, right? We've had maybe, you know, two or three things that were kind of like questionable, like altercations. One thing happened outside the club before the guy even walked in. Mm-hmm. And when it happened, we actually deaded the party at SL and moved it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You know, people feel comfortable in that space. People feel it because the music is going to dictate the energy.
Facts.
You know what I'm saying? And if, you know, if we playing, you know, you listen to, you know, Jodeci or Mary J. Blige, or, you know, some, if you listen to some, you ain't going to want to fight, man. You try to. You
and
try to
get
the tough things don't go away when Tevin Campbell's
playing. But it's also the type of person that even wants to come.
Yeah.
You got to be in a certain mind frame to even want to hear that kind of
yes,
music.
Yes, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
I don't want to, 9 times out of 10, if you're in that mind frame to even go to hear that kind of music, you're not going to be trying to ice grill somebody all night. Like, that's not, you're not in that mind frame.
And bro, I'm going to keep it a buck, man. Like, we've always had a lot of women at our party, but the influx of women the past, like, maybe 3 months, it's been ridiculous. Like, absolutely ridiculous.
Book or
like,
fly.
Cue up.
Like, no doubt. No, absolutely ridiculous. Like this past Wednesday, I was like looking around like, yo, this is really insane. Like, I women I've never seen in Atlanta. Women like,
oh yeah?
Like, I'm like, what's up with this? What's up with this? You know what I mean? You know, on a Wednesday to get people who got 9 to 5 to come out. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's an incredible party.
Yeah.
It definitely is. I listen to R&B my whole life, mm-hmm. right? Obviously listen to hip hop, but I'm in there singing every lyric in there with y'all. Going crazy, like karaoke style. Yeah. Here's my only gripe though, right? You talked about Houston, did Toronto. We went to the Vegas after party show.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to figure out when's it coming to New York.
Nah. Well, I was gonna save that for off camera. Cause
Because
we
need a vibe.
I had a birthday party that was crazy. So Kenny Burns hosted it.
Yeah, wow. And David was a DJ?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So they were saying that, like, yo, we need to kind of have this. Because it was very reminiscent of an era that we grew up in New York.
Yes.
Like, I had AZ perform, The Lox perform, Ghostface perform. GZ came, Mello was there. So it was very 90s New York vibe, yeah. Right?
It's crazy.
So as you was talking, I was thinking, like, we need to do, like, a rooftop this summer. New York
Let's
City.
Do that.
And just have that element.
Let's do that. Like, at first, I was telling somebody to my boy Ryan last night. I was like, yo, like, New York, this shit feels really good up here. You know what I mean? Like, random, I'm staying in Brooklyn. I went to some bar in Williamsburg last night. The DJ was rocking. I walked by and I heard the DJ rocking. I walked in and I was saying to somebody, yo, like, we need to do something here. In New York, we got to figure this out. You know what I'm saying? Because it's just it feels good. It feels like summertime is getting ready to be crazy. You know what I'm saying? That's what it feels like.
It feels like one.
It feels like it's coming. Like summer's coming. You know what I mean?
As long as we're thinking on the same page.
I feel very, very good up here. Like, I was like, oh, this feels great.
But let me ask you the business model of, like, because a lot of people, that's another business that a lot of people want to get into is like party promoters. They don't really understand how, so it's like,
bro,
you, all right, how do you do this? Do you just rent out the venue or do you just get a percentage of the bar? How does this work?
So you could do it either way, right? But for us, we partner with Rare Martini. So, or any club, right, that we've done with. When we did 80 in Houston, it's the same kind of situation. We basically work out a percentage of everything, though, for us, because we...
Food,
bar, hookah, you know, and then we take 100% of the door. Now, mind you, we are, you know, considered now established, you know, an established brand. So these clubs are more
willing to cut better.
Yeah, they're more inclined to do those kind of deals with us. I know that the standard was like, you know, the standard's like 20% or 25% of the bar.
Then they do the bar guarantee.
Yeah, bar guarantee. So
I don't do
bar guarantees. I don't.
But for people that don't know what a bar guarantee, that's like if they say like you got to hit $10,000,
and then you start making money.
And then you start making money after that, because they want to make sure that they get their money first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
But yours comes from the beginning.
Yeah, from the beginning, from the gate. Because especially, you know, now, because like I said, we're a proven brand and know that. The feet are going to be in there. You know what I'm saying? They know that people are going to be in there. People are going to get bodies in there. And even then, us figuring out now, transitioning from, you know, that business model into now ownership, you know, we're trying to find a spot.
Owning a club. That's like AG.
Yeah.
He used to own... What was the club?
I mean, he owned so many clubs. He owned
Compound.
He owned Gold Room. He owned Vanquish and Rain. He owned, you know, back in the day, he owned Kaya. What's the spot? I mean, he's had a lot of clubs. Mm-hmm. AG's like he's like the club, you know, the nightlife legend of ATL. You know what I'm saying?
Is there because I'm wondering the formula for Ladies of R&B? You, Keith, Mixmaster David, is there a way, or is there maybe a thought of licensing it to where?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
DJs can do it somewhere else.
Well, we're talking about it. We're trying to figure it out. Like, you know, me and Keith own a trademark, and we own a brand, we own a trademark. So, we've definitely talked about it. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if Keith is ready to relinquish it yet. You know what I'm saying? Because it's such a personal
thing. You gotta have your hands on it.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Sure, it's done correctly.
You know, we don't know. We talked about franchising last year, actually. And it just has to make sense. It has to be whoever we would do it with, we have to have the same kind of passion and energy about, you know, because we're so hands-on with it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You said franchising, because I'm thinking, like, it could work, right? If you put the manual together, like, this is the playlist.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, here are the songs.
Yeah.
Or you just go on tour.
Well, a tour, we're definitely going to do that. We're doing a tour, and we also want to do, we're going to do a concert series. So we've already started the process.
With artists singing?
Yeah.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4 times points on your top 2 eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4 times points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Like a real, like almost like a, you know,
like a DJ Khaled type thing.
Yeah, but you know, but like live. You know what I'm saying?
Bring different cities, different artists.
Yeah. So
bottle service. All right, let's talk about this situation. Because, you know,
you ready for this?
I was going to the clubs pretty much my whole entire life.
Yeah.
So I actually saw it transition from before there was no bottle service.
I was just at the bar.
And then the bottle service was like a very small VIP. Actually meant that it was VIP.
VIP. So
right?
I just toasted my name.
I just walked in.
Yeah. I literally just toasted my name. That was like, VIP was just VIP. It wasn't the whole club.
It wasn't the whole club. Then before you know it, the whole entire club became bottle service VIP, right? And then the markup on these bottles went from 150 to 200, 300 to 700, 800. Like sometimes you got to pay $1,300 just to get like a little stand-up table in Miami, right? So it's like, as a nightlife promoter, I know it's good for your revenue, but do you think that it's not really sustainable? Like, do you think that it's kind of messed up the club to have?
I think it messed up the club. I think it messed up the club, absolutely. I think that it, I mean, granted, my personal opinion, this is also, you know, this is, you know, take me out, I'm taking my business self out of the equation at this point. A person who came up DJing in clubs, who makes music that plays in the clubs, who actually enjoy going out. When I was younger, you know, I remember going out and you could bag a shorty at the bar.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At the bar,
What you drinking?
Yeah, buy home girls. You know, 5 round of drinks for them and, you know, 2 rounds. And you like, you know, I remember though, you know what I mean? I remember that. Those days, and also you could take the shorty out to the dance floor, and y'all could dance, and y'all could talk, and,
right.
You know, like there was more interaction before this bottle service section business model there was more people interaction. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Right now, there's really no...
You can't meet somebody at a club.
Not, I mean, unless y'all go into the bathroom, yeah, and pass,
you gotta, you
grab her. You know what I mean?
You gotta bring the party with you.
Scout that. You grab the wrong person.
Oh, yeah, tricky. Because she might be with somebody.
You never know.
So you still... It's like the interaction, the actual club interaction. You know what I'm saying? People used to go to the club to
meet somebody. That's over with.
That's over with. Now it's like, look at me, how many people I got in the section with me, look how many bottles I got. It's a whole different kind of vibe now. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying. Now I'm making my duty to really roam the club. Mm-hmm. If y'all been there, I roam the club because if I don't, I won't see anybody.
Right, that's a fact.
You know what I'm saying?
Everybody just stays in that section.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I don't roam the club, I won't see anybody. So.
Is that BMF that revolutionized bottles?
That era. I don't think that they intended it for it to be like that. Right, yeah, they were VIP.
Just in it.
You know what I'm saying?
But it's like once
that's
they
real VIP.
Yeah.
They literally they ruined the economy in the club, right? Because they raised the value. It's like home comps, right? Like once somebody pays $1 million for a home, every home in the neighborhood is worth $1 million.
True.
So, and I wasn't there. You was there.
Yeah.
So from the stories that I heard, they spent $1 million, $500,000 in the club. It never really...
They didn't come back down. Yeah,
exactly. So, they inflated it.
I remember one time, yo, at Visions, and I think Slim was with me. Slim Thugs with me. I can't remember. But I remember we were trying to get bottles. And we went to Vision, and Alex put us on the table, and we were trying to buy bottles. And Alex was like, yo, there's no bottles to buy. And I was like, what you mean? There's no bottles to buy. Like, literally, they bought every bottle in the club. You're going to have to go talk to him.
To try to get a bottle.
Basically, what the strategy was, if I buy all the bottles in the club, the artists and the producers and the creatives will have to come talk to me. And then I could...
Establish a relationship.
I'm gonna give them the bottles. Like, the bottles ain't shit to them.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So then you go talk to the homie, kick it with him, take a few shots with him. And he's like, yo, man, grab what y'all want. You know? So then it's like, so that you're right. In that way, from an economy perspective, it did just mark everything up, and then it just never really came back down. But kind of a little bit, you know what I mean? But it's not like
how it used to be.
Yeah, back when, literally, it used to be, if you had a, like, before that era, if you had a bottle.
You were somebody.
If you were walking in the club with one bottle of champagne, like, yeah, bro, you doing it, man. You got, you know what I'm saying? Like,
not that white stuff.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. I know. No, but yeah, but like, it's definitely not like that now. But you know what's interesting, though? The trend that I'm seeing now is, okay, bottles are still a thing, right? But bottles are kind of like, well, the trend I'm seeing in Atlanta is you got to have 6 or 7 hookahs on the table. It's
the
like,
hookah thing
is out, bro.
The hookah thing is just going
too. It's hookah out, bro.
It's going like, too far.
No.
It's a staple.
It's really to a point where we've had some servers who book tables, you know, at Red Martini, and they'll bring the, you know, they're thinking that the most important thing is the
bottles.
So they, you know, they're bringing the bottles out, you know, fast. So you give me credit card, bring the bottles out fast. There are people who won't start drinking
until the hookah's there.
And I'm walking by like, yo, B Cox, tell the lady to bring the hookah. Like, what the hookah? I ordered like 5 hookahs. I'm like, oh shit, you didn't bring the hookahs? Let me go see, you know what I mean? Like, and it's like, it's really, literally, it's crazy. I mean, I remember when it started. And kudos to AG again, his brother Simon. Then when they had Ran and Vanquish, what Simon would do is that he would put, when you bought a table, he would give you hookah for free.
Complimentary.
Right? Just put it on the table, right? So initially, you're looking at the shit like, what is this? You know what I'm saying? I'm not, you know what I mean? But then what started happening was you would look at Simon's section. Right?
And all the girls were there.
And
they love
all the bad East African girls over there. They're like, they're having a ball over there. It's like 20 hookahs on the table. So you're like, well, you want the girls at your table too. So let's start. You know what I mean? And that's really, I watched them really build that popularity. Hookah was not nothing in Atlanta before that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have to, you, if you smoked hookah in Atlanta, you was actually going to a real hookah spot. Okay. He was probably from that region. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you weren't like the average Black American just going to the, you know, hookah spot. It wasn't like that. You know what I mean? And they changed it. Like, you got, like, and that shit spread like wildfire everywhere.
Synonymous now with Atlanta.
You know what I'm saying? like you can't even, like, I have friends that won't even go to certain restaurants.
Because there's no hookah.
Yeah, they
got hookah in the restaurants, everything. It's just going crazy.
No, like, for real. Like, if I be like, yo, let's go to Nobu, man. Ain't no hookah over there. Like, what? you're gonna pass Nobu up because it's like, crazy? You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, well, I'll see you guys after. I'm going to Nobu. Like, what? You know what I mean? Granted, we're all guilty of it, smoking hookah. We all smoke hookah. But it's like, bro, like, I'm not gonna not go to a five-star restaurant because there's no hookah in there, bro.
Well, the hookah thing is kind of, you know what, it causes issues because it takes up a lot of space. It's actually kind of like dangerous too.
It's dangerous and cumbersome.
Yeah.
And you gotta go under.
Yeah, it's like over. Play,
like, switch double dutch. Please, please.
Yeah, it is dangerous. It is like coals.
That's a fact.
It is dangerous.
Yeah. Alcohol and coals together is a
somebody knocked the hookah over.
It's a proper business, dog.
Yeah, your
hookahs used to be like $15, $10. It's a proper business. Now, dog, $60, $80, $100 for hookah.
$100 for hookah?
Damn. Yep.
Charge them out of flavor.
How important is customer service in that business? I think that's another business lesson. Like, as far as the nightlife, you got your regulars that buy tables. You got to cater to them. You got to make sure that people. That's my biggest thing I hate when I go to clubs and I got to wait for these bottles.
Yeah.
You're already spending $1,500, $2,000. And then I've waited sometimes like 40 minutes. Yo, bro, I just want the bottles.
The bottles, bro. I just gave you guys two bands, bro.
Talk about the importance.
They're
of
right there, guys.
Well, for me, yeah. For me. That's another reason why I roam the club, because I want to make sure that people are getting what they need. You know what I'm saying? So for me, customer service is everything. You know what I mean? And we try to embark that on, you know, on the service. You know what I mean? Like, yo, like, and I would say 85% of the time they get it right. You know what I'm saying? But it's hard, you know, when it's packed and it's busy, it's like, I understand how difficult it is to navigate, you know, in the club, but customer service is everything, which is why I roam the club. Like, if I'm roaming the club and I see something that's, I'm like, yo, y'all good? Yo, they still ain't brought you up?
So you hands on.
Yeah.
With security, everything.
Yeah.
I think what makes the party so successful is because there's an era of just great music.
Mm-hmm.
To make this thing sustainable, it has to have a continuation of eras of great music.
Yes.
What do you feel like the state of R&B music is right now? Like, we you know, for every Summer Walker, it's like,
it's a good question.
Who's the next person?
I think R&B is actually primed to be in really good shape. You know, you have Coco Jones, you got SZA, you got October London, you got Lucky Day, you got Jack Freeman, you got, you know, you have all these artists that Brent Faiyaz. You know, you have all these artists, Division.
I've been trying to tell them like how big Brent Faiyaz is.
Yeah, Division. Dude. You know, you have all these artists that are now like really serving the R&B genre, like Kenya Dixon. Like, it's just so many artists I can name that I think that are now serving R&B. Genre proper. Cleo Soul, Naomi Sharon, you know, just a lot of artists now that want to do the music, that want to actually do that music. So I think that we are going to be in good shape. I feel like we're heading towards a space where we're going to see an influx of new R&B, new traditional R&B music, you know, coming out. You know what I mean? And I know there's a lot of, you know, toxic R&B is like so popular now. You know what I mean? But I think that even with what's happening with the Money Long record, you know, you can see that people want to transition back into the love language space.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I hear it. Like, when you hear that song, you hear, oh, this is going to be timeless. I think SZA has one with Snooze.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be timeless.
Mm-hmm.
October London is interesting because that sound.
But SZA said that she's not an R&B artist.
I'm saying the song Snooze, it just feels like that's just going to be a timeless record. When you hear it, it's like, that can play forever.
Yeah.
It's like the Tevin Campbell thing.
Yeah, yeah.
People may not remember any song.
Yeah.
They know that one.
Can We Talk to Go No? And Snooze is definitely one of those songs.
That's one of those songs. So I'm even thinking of like these artists, like we were talking about Brett, and I was just like, he got a couple of them. Are they timeless? Like Jackie Brown for me is like, I think for this generation might be that one.
Mm-hmm. I like Jackie Brown a lot. Yeah, Jackie Brown is definitely one of them songs that are popular.
Right. It's going to be like, are they making, ICU could be one.
ICU's definitely, but I think it'll be
one. It's one of them?
Yeah, I think ICU could be one.
Okay, we'll give it that. We're going to give it that. But like, are there enough artists making these timeless records? Or are they making these records for modern day?
They're making a lot of timestamp records. You know?
Right.
You know, it is hard, you know, and it's hard not to at this point because it's, we're living in a DSP era. I mean, we're not living in the, you know, CDs, tape, you know, LP era. We're living in an era where, you know, music is fast. You know what I mean? We live in an era where you could drop a song, you could make a song today, drop it today, you know, if you want to. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
We're living in a real fast, so it's hard not to make timestamp records. You know what I mean? But then the people who make records that are, you know, that are timeless, we they strive for timeless, they stand out. You know, like, you know, I think that Silk Sonic's Leave the Door Open is a record that's going to play forever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's a super syncable, super, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's one of those songs that's going to play. You know what I mean? No matter what. It's not going to be like, oh, remember that song they made? You know what I mean? You know?
It feels it. You can feel it.
Yeah. So, I don't know, man. You know, it's whoever leans into that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I feel like Brent is an interesting. He's interesting because it feels like he is the timestamp. You know what I mean? Which kind of makes him timeless. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like he's the guy that everybody's kind of like. You know, when I hear like a Four Bats, I feel like he's trying to do Brent, even though Brent. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? He's like, he's trying to do that. It's like, that's what his goalpost is. You know what I mean? So to me, Brent is he is the sound of the time when it comes to these young cats coming up. But I think that if, you know, Coco Jones leans into her classic shit.
She has the sound.
If, you know, SZA who says she's not an R&B artist, which I understand her point of view, you know what I mean? Because a record like Kill Bill, which was number one on a pop chart, as soon as you make a record like that, you're not an R&B artist no more. You know what I mean? And so I understand her
pop star
plight. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If she was a white artist and had done Kill Bill and Snooze, she would be a pop artist. They wouldn't, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
She's Taylor a black Swift, she would be like,
yeah, or you know, or competing in that space.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But because she's a, you know, dark skinned, thick black chick, you know, and she's been known to make, she's made R&B music for so long, you know, it's like you start making alternative music and people still want, and you make alternative, start making hits.
Yeah.
And she, you know, it wasn't like she, you know, Kill Bill's a smash, you know what I mean? So
like,
it was like
The Weeknd's a pop artist.
I would consider him a pop artist, but he considers himself R&B though.
He considers himself R&B?
Yeah, people consider The Weeknd R&B.
I'm with you.
You know what I mean?
I think he's pop.
I think he's pop too, though.
I'm with you.
I agree with you. I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree. I mean, from the House of Balloons album, I always thought, I never put him in when those mixtapes were coming out, I never put him in an R&B box. I always felt like, oh, this shit is alternative.
I feel like,
you know what I mean?
R&B is like, it's Usher, it's Chris Brown, and then everybody else falls under that.
But then there's a different, I think even Chris Brown has ushered in a subdivision of rap R&B.
Yeah, yeah.
Even like Tory Lanez, like that's that.
Yeah,
it's a rap blast. It's a rap. They're like literally rapping. They're singing lyrics that should be rapped.
Yeah, blast.
They're like harmonizing it.
Black,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, like yeah. It's traditional R&B. When I say the use word traditional R&B, I'm thinking Usher. I'm thinking
old school like Mary J. Blige.
Mary J. Blige.
Because like these dudes that do six bars singing, then they do four bars rapping, then they'll you know, it's, and then they might have a whole song rapping and song singing and like going back and forth with it. And Chris Brown can really rap.
Oh, we seen that.
Yeah, I mean, dog. Dog, I was like, apparently. I was like, wow.
That ended quick.
I mean, quick. I was like, yo, my man, like, well, wow. You'll be like, okay, like that.
How are we going to respond to that?
I thought that that was so just crazy, because I was like, you know, you hit a Drake and Kendrick thing, it escalated. It was like it was slow, and then it just, you know what I mean? Then it escalated really fast. Chris Brown didn't let that man breathe, man. Like, for real. Chris was like, I'm talking to you directly, and I'm going to tell you. You know what I mean? Like, it was, I'm like, yo, my man, it was scathing. Like,
yeah.
Yo. You
yeah, know what I mean? That was offensive.
It's a
brutal attack.
Yeah.
Yeah, nah, I was like, well, that, like you said, that ended quickly.
That's there you over. Have it. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, because I was kind of like tuned into that one. Like, you know, the Drake and Kendrick initially, I was like, oh, it seemed like they're going to be, you know, it's going to be, a little banter for a little, I thought it was going to go on a little longer. I thought it was going to be like, I'm going to come back to that. I'm watching the Chris Brown Quavo shit. I was like, that shit ended fast. I was like, oh, man.
Well, speaking of that, Drake gets a lot of criticism for not writing his rhymes, allegedly. You as a writer, right? But hip hop is different than R&B, I get. Do you think that discredits his legacy? Because Kanye West doesn't write a lot of his stuff.
At all. Yeah, Kanye has a lot of people in the room with him,
right?
But Kanye is also Kanye. He's a producer. Yeah, he's an entity. He's the vision, right? And it doesn't discredit him because he has so much back there.
That's what I'm saying. People don't criticize Kanye the way they criticize Drake.
No, I don't think people ever looked at Kanye as a real MC.
As a real rapper.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, not no disrespect. Kanye's one of my
even like college
artists.
Dropout era, one of my graduation. They don't look.
I mean, the stories are legendary in how the labels was clowning him. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's legendary how they thought. Yeah, you know, he willed himself because people doubted him. You know what I mean? They never viewed him that way
as a real rapper.
Yeah, so he always wanted to be viewed that way. They never viewed him that way. That's what willed.
So he's not held to that.
Yeah,
he was dead nice.
Huh?
Graduation.
No, Kanye one of the greatest of ever do it.
His like, no, he's yeah. I mean, that means yeah.
Outside the assistance, he's
yeah. Let's not. Yeah, let's not. Like he's him. You know what I mean? When it comes to, you know, his legacy.
But yeah. So Drake, how do you feel about this situation where it's a constant thing? You as a writer, what's your take on this?
Well, first of all, Drake is actually a superb songwriter. I think that people, you know, when you have collaborators, sometimes those collaborations can be maximized a little more than what they really are. And I will say this, when you have the Quentin Miller demos, that's where it gets a little weird, right? but I've known Drake to be somebody who's always been, that was always his strong point. Him writing was always his strong point. Mm-hmm. Now, he's always had a flair of R&B in there. He's always had a flair of, you know what I mean? So I think that maybe that is what is part of the discrediting too. But as far as the MCs, you know, MCs, when he came out, it wasn't the rap singing thing wasn't really a thing.
He revolutionized.
Right?
Yeah, he revolutionized.
So you have people who are rappers looking at him like,
who's this singer?
He's a singer. Yeah. Not a rapper.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he already kind of had an uphill, you know, battle to climb. You know, he was already going to be uphill with that, right? And then you add, then when you start, you know, collaborating with people, because I mean, even, you know, Jay, who we all, you know, admire and look at as one of the greatest, probably if not the greatest, right? You know, I'm not saying he had collaborators, but he was inspired, you know, Biggie inspired. You know, Chris Anif inspired. You know, he's had people around him. Beanie, you know, now he might not have, he didn't take any bars from them, but, you know,
he fed off certain,
certain flows, you could tell, like, it's Philly, you know, it's like Petey Crack, and, you know, you could tell certain flows he took based on being inspired, right? With Drake, you know, it's a slippery slope when you have people in the room, you know, you're supposed to be
The guy,
the MC of all MCs. You have people in a room feeding you lines. You know, it's
allegedly.
Allegedly. Allegedly.
Well, that's not alleged.
No, Feeding You Lines is alleged. It's alleged.
Well, we know that.
I've never sat in the room.
He has co-writers.
Yeah. So
reference tracks, not co-writers. Different.
Because that, you don't know. Also, that's nothing. You don't know. Like, I've been in a room where somebody was in the booth, right? And another songwriter's in the booth, and they can't come up with something they're supposed to come up for, whatever, and I'm feeding them lines, and they're actually saying the lines. So, and it's on Pro Tools. So we don't know what that Quentin Miller reference track was. We don't know if Drake was in the control room saying, "No, do it like this." Since it's, you know, give me a guideline of his without, you know, we don't know what that was. You don't know what the process was. And I'm only giving elite people the grace because everybody's talking like they was in the studio. Yeah. I literally be in the studio and I know how the process goes when you're writing with someone. You know what I mean? So it's a slippery slope for dude. You know what I mean? And you know, it was a few names that Kendrick named, a few writers he named in that scathing diss. You know what I mean?
Scathing.
And I'm like, you know, it's a slippery slope. I'll say this though, he's what I do. I mean, there are a lot of things that I respect about Drake as an artist and as a creative. And like I said, I do know, you know, him writing for other people, writing Unthinkable for Alicia Keys, right? Like this guy, like his pen is really fucking good. Like, I don't want people to, he's got a premium pen. Let's not play like that's not what's happening. You know what I mean? You know, he writes hits for other people too. You know what I mean? You know, yeah. When Kanye West, he's flip-flopped, but when Kanye says,
I want Drake to write
my whole album.
Yeah.
Like in that moment, that was an honest place for him. He felt that. That was like, you know what I mean? So you don't get somebody to say that if they haven't been in the room with you and seen that you get to get down like that. You know what I mean? I will say that battle has been probably one for the books, though. I've never seen anything like
that. Nah, I think it was the best battle ever.
I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, you factor in all the factors.
And just how fast.
Yeah, rapid.
Nah. I've never seen anything like
that. Be that creative, that fast.
Yeah.
Have impact.
And it's the first social media.
Yes.
Super mega battle.
Yes.
Right? So it's like having everybody chime in real time.
We couldn't chime in with the other battles.
And Jay and
Nod. That was it. It stopped in your neighborhood.
Neighborhood, but this is a worldwide conversation.
Yeah.
Right? And Family Matters dropped. And I was like, okay. Right? I was like, oh, okay. All right, Drake. Let's go. Fight back. It wasn't even, was it an hour?
I think it was like a half an hour.
It was quick.
It wasn't even an hour later.
Yeah.
He drops the bomb.
He solely eclipsed his whole rollout.
Like,
questions on that.
Like,
that's probably the best strategic move in hip hop
ever.
Yeah.
And it's like, bro, it was like, what I appreciate about Kendrick too is that he knows that Drake is strategic.
Yeah.
Like Meek wasn't,
no.
First of all, Meek was just, I don't know what was going on with him when did them tweets and he started that and didn't have like a
strategy in place. Yeah.
You're dealing with a guy who
really does.
All he does is strategize. You know what I mean? So what I appreciate about Kendrick is that he knew his opponent going into this.
He knew what to be prepared for.
And he took time.
Yeah. And when he was talking about, when Drake's talking about drop, we know you writing them double and triple and quadruple entendres. And he was like,
just sitting in that room in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Like, okay. Huh? Got you. Yeah. I got you. I'm on your head top.
He was Oppenheimer.
You know what I'm saying?
The real Oppenheimer.
Like the flurries to just
bang, bang, and then bang. I mean, he gave us the song that's going to be the song of the summer.
Might
be the song of the West Coast going forward.
Oh yeah.
Who knows?
Flawless execution on his part.
Feels very, very hit him up ish.
Yeah.
You know I think I mean? Bigger.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
I think bigger.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So I was like, oh, this boy studied. He studied that battle very well.
Shout out to Mustard. Thank you for your contribution.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of the Drake switching gears but staying on it, one of the diss records was the AI song with Tupac, and that was
a misstep.
You didn't like that?
That was a misstep for him. I think that that's where it started, where the misstep started.
That's where he started to get a little too anxious.
That's the misstep. I mean, because the way he's rapping on Family Matters, I think that if he just would have rapped.
Or if he would have just rapped the AI song himself.
Yeah, or just rapped the verse. Yeah.
I think he was trying to be.
But it was creative.
But it brings it to a point, because I think in his brain, he was trying to be super creative, right? Like, what has never been done before? And nobody of his stature has ever really championed AI. Timbaland has a song with Big, but people didn't really pay attention to it. Yeah. But like Drake, one of the biggest artists in the world, right, at the peak of a battle, he kind of went out on a limb. So this brings me to my question as far as AI.
Mm-hmm.
What is your thoughts on AI? Because it's like, for a writer, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's people that still want to hear Whitney Houston, right?
Yeah, man.
There's people that still want to hear Al Green.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah,
Prince.
Right? You know? Yeah. Prince. What's your thoughts on that? Because it could go either way, right?
Because it's dangerous. It's dangerous, but it's also an incredible tool.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's dangerous, though. It's so dangerous because, we know about deep fakes and all that. You know what I mean? And a lot of times you could tell when something
is not real.
It's not real. But this AI thing is getting so good. You know what I mean? And it's just dangerous. I mean, AI is dangerous.
Yeah. Have you used it?
I've used it for to strip tracks. So like there's this website called laolao.ai. So if I wanted to grab, you know, the drums from Footsteps in the Dark and just take them. You know what I mean? You could take them in instead of trying to.
It could also, so when we use with Akon, we showed him ChatGPT for the first time ever. And we said, like, write a love song. We gave it a thing. I said, and do it in Akon's tone.
Yeah.
And he was reading it. He was like, yo, this is something that I actually write. He's a writer. So that's another thing people aren't thinking about AI.
Yeah.
Writes, too.
Yeah.
So it could be like, all right, write me a Brian Michael Cox type song, da-da-da-da-da.
For my ex-girlfriend.
Are you fearful for that? How do you feel about that? Because everybody's talking about the vocal part of it, but nobody's really talking about the writing part of it.
Yeah, that's
even harder to control, right?
It's way harder to control because you don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't know where it's coming from, you know what I mean? And then with the whole, what's the website? It was a UDO? Where they're making mock versions of time era songs, like how the 50s versions Sexy Red,
that was crazy.
Yeah, so like, which is, and people thought that shit, a lot of people thought that shit was real.
It's a fact.
Y'all think that people make music like this back in the 50s?
It's like this is the original sample.
Yeah, like, you know what I'm saying, bro? but it for me, it's definitely scary, but the reality is that's where it's going. So at the end of the day, you either, you know, try to regulate it, or, you know, you can't fight it because at the end of the day, you know, right now it's new and it's fun or whatever.
Well, you could try, because that's what, so in the Hollywood strike,
mm-hmm.
that's one of the things that they had in the strike was that the writers wanted to ensure that AI scripts wasn't going to be made because they was going to lose their job.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no union for music, right? But that's something that could potentially have like some fight, like the musician, you know, writers association could be like, yo, y'all can't use more than 20% of AI, because essentially it could literally take away all musical writers' jobs.
I mean, it could take away everything.
Everybody, yeah.
I mean, the fact that you could go on UDO and type in, make me a 50 sounding track of so-and-so with these words, whatever, and it spits it out and people believe that it was real, that means you can go to UDO and say, yo, make me country music, a country song that's talking about so-and-so, and then you could take that MP3 or whatever that file is, put it through another AI, lao.ai, separate the tracks if you want, you know what I mean? And it then it's yours. You can say, well, mine, you know, it's really who's to tell you that it's not? Who's to say you didn't create that? There's nobody that can say you didn't create it.
It becomes a tough competition. For one, on the soul side, it's like, yeah, I could prompt it to have me write a song based on Michael Brian Cox and say, all right, I want that to be towards my ex-girlfriend. I want it to feel like Confessions did, and they can create that. But what it also can do is say, all right, not only do I want the song to be sound like it was written by you, but I want it to be sound like it's written by Dream as well. I want it to be like Jonathan, like all these people, and I could put 30 of them before you can make one. Mm-hmm. Right, mm-hmm. So it becomes even more of a challenge.
No, it's like I said, it's scary. I'm actually learning. I'm doing whatever I can to learn as much about it as possible. You know what I mean? You know, everybody said, well, you know, you can't replace
human element.
So your soul, you know, yeah. Replace soul. Your soul. Yeah. But you know, where is the soul in general? You know. Where's the soul in general? You know what I mean? It's like, it's looking like it could probably replace it. You know what I'm saying?
On second thought.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, like, where's the soul? You know what I mean? So,
because somebody called Jill Scott.
Yeah. So it's, you know, AI is, I mean, it's very, very, it's controversial. It's interesting. I'm trying to learn as much as I can about it before I like really, really, you know, dive in and say, you know, that I'm for it or against it. I just know that I do know it's dangerous.
Well, before you leave, any new initiatives? I know you got the label you're working with, our guys at LVRN.
Yes, my boys.
Josh, what up?
Yeah.
Tune in, what up?
Yeah.
Guys, so yeah, what's on the horizon that we may have not spoke about that you know, definitely want to get out there?
Well, you know, I'm still working in a capacity with LVRN as executive producer, so we got a few things in the pot cooking right now that I'm excited about.
You're A&R.
You know, actually, I'm just an executive producer now. I was A&R last year, but I'm just an executive on the A&R team now. And then I'm doing. Then I have my company, Illustrate New Ideas.
You looking for talent?
Yes.
How can people?
You catch me on Instagram at Brian Michael Cox,
and they can send you music.
Yep, send me music. My email address is bmpc.mp3@gmail.com, or you can send me music at brian@lvrn.com. So yeah, I'm looking. I'm really, really like round the clock looking right now too. So, you know, let's build it up. Let's do something.
Let's do it. I've been on record saying this, so I want your opinion too. I think post Confessions, because that to me is the best body of work from any R&B artist, maybe any artist. I put Illmatic in Confessions. Like those are my like three favorite albums all time.
Yeah.
Outside of post Confessions, what have you listened to that you said this is a classic piece of work? I said that SOS is probably the best album that I've heard. I think Over It might be in there. What are some other bodies of work from the R&B genre that you had? This is a classic. This is a masterpiece.
Definitely, since his last album, we can say SOS, definitely. Mm. That's a good question. What am I listening to?
I think Snow Allegra had a classic.
Hmm?
All the Feels?
I think it's a good album.
I think it's a classic.
That's some classic songs.
Frank Ocean's album, the first album.
The first one?
Channel Orange.
Channel Orange is crazy.
That's in there. That's in there. That's 2011.
Yeah. It's crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah,
I think that. You know, it's crazy. I was, you know, I really enjoy Watch the Throne. Really enjoy Pablo.
Saint Pablo.
The Life of Pablo.
I don't know why I like that album specifically.
Don't say nothing.
I really like that album. But I mean, we know his magnum opus is My Dark Twisted Fantasy. Though we know that's his
the greatest.
That's his best piece of work. You know what I mean?
Kanye.
It's a masterpiece. Those are all masterpieces that we agreed on. I think St. Pablo we didn't agree on.
He got a lot of them. Let me think. I'm drawing a blank. I liked, what album I felt like? I'm going to keep it real. I like Lemonade.
Well, yes.
Beyonce's yeah. Lemonade.
Lemonade.
The story,
the visuals.
The visual, the continuity of the album.
Lemonade's dope.
Lemonade's
just some that's really, really, really dope. Great songs on there.
Dope body of work.
That's there. We got that on the wall.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. What else? I was a little apprehensive about this album when they first dropped because I didn't know where it was coming from. But now that after listening back to it, I think that people overlooked this album because it just kind of came out of nowhere. But Usher's and Zaytoven's album, I like.
That's the last joint?
No, it's a couple albums ago. They got the car on the front.
Yeah.
I listened to
album was Usher and Zaytoven. That album is a really good one.
There's a joint that I really like.
Yeah, he got some songs that I really, really, really like. Yeah. Like wish that they would have actually went after. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he kind of just dropped it and just kind of like
whatever.
They didn't really go after it. You know what I mean? But records like Say What You Want and Peace Sign and like he got some joints on there that's
go crazy.
That should be bigger.
That's very slept on.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I'll tell you, can I give you one last slept on? Yeah. Day 26.
Yeah.
Yo.
So everybody.
Yo.
That's out of everything that I've.
I think that's a classic.
Out of everything that I've ever worked on, right? Of all the things I've worked on, that album always surprises me when people say it's a classic, but it really shouldn't because I was telling Sway yesterday, I was like, I really took Day 26 personal, right? I took that project personal. I took that whole process personal because the five guys they picked were my five guys.
Mm-hmm.
That I had picked. So I really, like, when I got into the studio with them, first of all, I love working with groups. I love working with male groups. I love working with groups in general. So, because I like placing voices
mm-hmm.
in different, I like hearing different timbres and placing them somewhere. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a really, really big, beautiful puzzle for me, right? So I listened to the album and I was like, oh, these songs are really good. Like, you know, I mean, you know, like when you're making it, you just kind of like personal. And I went number one, I was happy about it, but I was just upset that that Bad Boy and Atlantic didn't really go as hard as I thought they should have went with the promo. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There were so many great songs on there, so many great singles. I feel like they just coasted on the television show.
Yeah.
And it was like, Atlantic, Bad Boy, y'all... Where the promo team at? What y'all doing? Let's do this like it's a 112 album. You know what I mean? I took that album personal and I listened to it recently and was like, damn, I could tell like this album was
good.
Really good.
Did you write Co-Star?
I didn't do Co-Star. Co-Star's fire though. Whew. Fire. Fire.
That's cool.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Since you've been gone. That's yours.
Yeah. Since you've been gone, exclusive. I did a bunch of songs on
it. So you youngest out there.
Together.
Go give it a listen. Well, months since you've been going up.
Well, my brother, thank you for joining us.
Man, thank you guys, man. I'm sorry I was late, man. My apologies. Right, but I'm so, glad we got a chance to talk.
It's all good,
yeah, absolutely, man.
Yeah, I have the R&B pop-up activation at InvestFest.
Yeah.
That's going... You know what that InvestFest is?
Yeah.
Yeah, we should do something.
Let's do that.
Yeah.
I think I came to InvestFest last year because you got Jermaine.
Yeah.
Jermaine last year.
Yeah. Shout out to
yeah.
Teddy.
Yeah, nah. Let's do that. It's that easy. No question. Let's do that. It's not even no question. Let's make that happen. You know what I'm saying? And whatever. And let's figure this New York rooftop thing out, too.
No, for sure.
That's going to happen.
You know
what
I'm saying? Summertime is coming. We need to do something.
New York, you should thank us now.
Thank us in advance.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, y'all. Thank you for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. You can earn 4x points on your top two eligible spending categories every month, like transit, U.S. restaurants, and gas stations. That's the powerful backing of American Express. 4x points on up to $150,000 in purchases per year. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy. But being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care. And BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today to get 10% off your first month.